If we come to the body and insert a needle and step back, there's an effect. But if we bring our awareness and presence to that experience, something altogether different can start to happen as well. I think of the cranial work as well, right? This listening to the rhythms of the system. In my experience, the tation becomes almost like an antenna that allows us to listen to the movement of qi in the channels, in the organs, in the system as a whole.
I'm Michael Max, and this is Qiological, the podcast that curates East Asian medicine and methods through the power of conversation. The tacit agreement of medicine is that we're going to do something. We're engaged and paid to help our patients scratch the main concern off the top of the list that they walked in your door with. The agreement of medicine is that we're here to help our patients to get rid of something that they have and don't want, or don't have and want. Listen to the language we ourselves use. We fix people. We heal them. More often than not, we also take credit for getting rid of the pain or setting their digestion right. As holistic as we might like to paint ourselves, at least for me, I constantly find myself thinking in transactional terms of being the expert that has been brought in to remedy a problem that my patients have not been able to solve for themselves. And yet, where does healing actually come from? Did the needles we chose change a person's knee pain, or was it the patient and their response to the needles that did the work? I have patients who come in and tell me that I got rid of their heartburn. And the part of me that likes to feel like a skilled and competent professional drinks that in like spring flowers open to the warm morning sunlight. But there is a flip side. The times when things don't get better, or the situation, it gets worse. Now the shoe is on the other foot, and it's all too easy to blame circumstances or the patient's behavior. What are we responsible for, and what are we responsible to? This, for me, is the crux of being a practitioner, of finding that middle path, of not taking all the credit and willingly shouldering some of the responsibility. Or better yet, to be able to receive the news of a patient's condition and take it simply as information, not a comment on our skill, ability, or sense of worth. I get it. We all want to be helpful. Otherwise, we'd have chosen other careers. It's rough when we don't see the improvement with our patients. After all, again, there's that tacit agreement in the back of my mind that we're here to help and capable of doing so as well. Which opens a larger question of what is help? What if I'm helping my patients to persist in behaviors that over the long term are detrimental to them? What if I'm being asked to help a woman conceive who is so narcissistic that her child is surely in for a world of suffering and pain at the hand of the person who's supposed to be looking out for them? Furthermore, it opens the question of who does the healing. Is it coming through our skill and a willful intending? Does it arise as a revitalization within the patient that brings forth what at times seems like a miraculous change? Again, I'm back to the thorny question of just what is it that we are doing when we spend time with our patients in clinic? And what if the very, very best of my air quotes here doing yields no results? Because the agreement is we're going to do something. And what if that doing doesn't bear fruit? Here's the thing. And I suspect some of the placebo research bears this out as well. There is the what we do. But beyond that, there is the how we are with our patients. One of the wonderful things about practicing acupuncture is we have a variety of languages with which we can communicate. We have a relationship with organs that conventional medicine does not. We hold a perspective on the entanglements of mind and body that you will not find in a laboratory doing genetic research. I am reluctant to say that we can hold space for a patient in a unique way because that is such a cliche phrase. Maybe more precise to say we can conjure possibilities. At the heart of Taoism is the idea of wu wei, of not doing, of allowing the Tao to move effortlessly through us. Too often, I took that as meaning that I was off the hook to do anything, that I was a leaf passively riding the surface tension down a stream, which I think misses the mark. Actually, the phrase is not wu wei, it's wei wu wei, to do not doing, which is infuriating to our logical Western mind. But I think it gets to the heart of this issue of our role in the doing of practicing medicine. Doing not doing is an invitation into a state of receptive attention. It allows you to listen to what is not being said. It gives you the capacity to hear what your patient wants and dares not ask for. It gives you the ability to sit with their pain without reflexively attempting to fix it. It lets you see the contradictions that they hold and not point out a solution to them. There is something in the attentive receptivity that is communicative, that allows for change without demanding it, that allows you to see your patient's suffering and your own without immediately trying to put those fires out. Often enough, the capacity to sit with the entire catastrophe is the first essential step in working through confusion and pain. Indeed, the tacit agreement of medicine is that we're supposed to do something. We ignore that at our peril. But what that doing is that will be most helpful? I suspect it begins first with the how we are when sitting with another. I remember when a buddy of mine was suggesting that I get acupuncture for a health issue that had been dogging me. I thought, what is a little needle going to do? Like, how's that supposed to change anything? Well, of course it did. And I remember the little spring-loaded taching tools that we were told to buy in our first quarter of acupuncture school, which I did. But I thought they were toys, something to play with before we got to the main event of using actual needles. Somewhere along the line, I realized that you can get as much attention with a whisper as you can with a shout. More actually, in the right situation. And taching needles, they have a potent whisper. In this conversation, I have invited Gary Klepper, Erlyn Truitt, and Thomas Sorensen to join me for some talk on the taching. These guys have some different perspectives on this potent chi tool. And if you're the kind of practitioner who has an affinity for attending to touch, stillness, and quiet rhythms, you're going to enjoy this conversation. We'll get into it in a moment after a few words from the folks that make it possible to pipe geological into your ears. We'll be right back. Don't touch that dial. These conversations come to you through the generous support of our sponsors and members. All the sponsors here provide helpful products or services that you'll find beneficial in your clinical work. Worried that an EMR is too complex for you? Jane has friendly and knowledgeable support. Mayway Herbs is celebrating the 55th year of their family business. You're invited to make use of their vast library of resources. Are you concerned about the health of Mother Earth? AccuFast Needles is doing something about that. You can too. And later in the show, Ancestral Sturman offers up a sinew treatment, and the folks at Blue Poppy have something special to share as well. Do be sure to visit the sponsors page on the Geological website to take advantage of all the special offers our terrific sponsors have for listeners of the podcast.
Hi folks, I'm Yvonne Lau, president of Mayway Herbs. Our family business turns 55 this year, and we wouldn't have gotten this far without the love and support of our community. We're truly grateful and promise you that we'll continue to work hard to support you and your practice. Please visit Mayway.com to find the perfect Pumsar brand formula, or formulate your own in our dispensary. Our site also has lots of articles, videos, and herbal recipes for you to explore. And tune into our podcast, Chinese Medicine Matters, for insightful discussions on all things TCM. Learn about treatment strategies and powerful herbal remedies. As we welcome the month of May, our focus is on women's health. Our newsletter articles and podcast episodes this month will highlight different aspects and unique challenges women face. So subscribe or tune in. And if you're a practitioner, get a discount on our women's health formulas this month. Just visit Meiwei.com. This season and every season, trust Meiwei Herbs for your health and wellness needs. And thank you for supporting Real Chinese Medicine.
I love how technology can help to automate my office, and I want to share with you my favorite tool for doing so, Jane. Jane is a clinic management software in EMR with a human touch. Whether you're switching your software or going paperless for the first time, the Jane team knows that the onboarding process can feel a little overwhelming. That's why with Jane, you don't just get software, you get a whole team. Included in every Jane subscription is their award-winning customer support available by phone, email, and chat whenever you need it, even Saturdays. You can also book a free account setup consultation to review your account and ensure you feel confident about going live. If you're interested in making the switch to Jane, head to jane.app/switch to book a one-on-one demo with a member of their support team. And be sure to mention the code CHEOLOGICAL at the time of sign up for a 1 month grace period on your new Jane account. I don't know about you, but sometimes I take a step back and marvel at my acupuncture needles. I mean, they're the world's simplest medical tool, a sharpened wire and a handle. That's it. And with this simple tool, hundreds of health conditions can be resolved. I love it. What I didn't love was the amount of packaging waste I generated at the end of the day. But that has now changed too. Ever since I switched to AccuFast Earth-Friendly Needles, I reduced my packaging waste by 90%. Not only are they a great needle, but the folks at AccuFast plant a tree for every two boxes of needles I use in the clinic. By switching to AccuFast Needles, you'll be helping patients, planting trees, and joining a community of practitioners changing the world. Like our simple needle, being a part of the solution, it's simple too. Visit AccuFastNeedles.com/CHEOLOGICAL to learn how. Hey friends, I have a terrific show for you today. Today, we're talking Teixin. I have Thomas Sorensen, Gary Klepper, and Erlen Truitt with me. These guys are all folks who use the Teixin on a regular basis. I have managed to corral them all into one place so that we can talk about this really strange aspect of acupuncture using a needle that doesn't pierce the skin. Now, I think acupuncture is already kind of a strange thing. You know, thinking about and explaining how needles stuck into the body lead to healing, look, that's already a heavy lift. But today, we're going to talk Teixin. And look, let's be real, they're more like toothpicks than needles. They don't pierce the skin. And yet, all of you guys that are here with me today, you use this method in your practice. It's part of your toolkit. It's kind of part of mine these days. I want to start with just a quick introduction of who you are and how you've come to using the Teixin. And then I've got a really annoying question for you. So, Gary, let's start with you. Tell us a little bit about yourself and how you came to the Teixin.
Sure. Well, the broad background is I'm a chiropractor by license. I've been in practice since 78. And over my career, I have gravitated more and more toward the classical Chinese approach with a lot of study of Japanese meridian therapy, mainly under Miki Shima over the years. In terms of my coming into using the Teixin, I have to credit or blame, as you might say, Erlen's teacher, Kuwahara-sensei. When I took my first class with him in January of 20, he was selling all kinds of meridian therapy tools at his class. And I ran across a very nice, very long gold Teixin. And as soon as I held it in my hand, I knew that it was going to be a primary tool for me, even though I had no idea how to use it. So it's been a journey of discovery of the potential of the Teixin since then. And now contact tools have become my primary tool for doing any sort of intervention with the channel system.
All right, Erland. Well, you've already been named, at least through your teacher. Tell us a bit about how you came to using the Teixin.
I was first exposed to the Teixin through, as Gary mentioned, man who's been my primary teacher for the last 22 years, Takayuki Koe Kuwahara, or just Kuwahara-sensei. I started studying with him in 2000, and he was originally a student of Fukushima Kodo, who started the Toyohari Association. There's a backstory there, but he ended up on his own teaching. And his primary root treatment methodology was through non-insertive needle technique. So he used very thin number two silver needles to do the primary pulse balancing. And by extension, once we cross the gap, so to speak, to non-insertive needle technique, then almost anything can become a tool. So he introduced me to the idea of a Teixin that looked very much like a thick needle. Now, you know, over time, there are so many different forms of Teixin, what they look like. But Kuwahara-sensei was the first to introduce me to this idea of non-insertive technique. And at this point, what we use is, Kuwahara jokingly calls it an ultra-thin Teixin, or a UTT, which is basically a silver needle that the tip has been ground down. So it's rounded instead of pointed. So when you touch the needle to the skin, even though it's very thin, it won't go through the skin as easily as a sharp needle. So that was my original introduction. And then through trips to Japan and studies over there with various teachers, I've been introduced to all different forms of Teixin and all different uses for Teixin. And I've been so surprised in the last 5 years how it's become such a popular technique. Michael, you mentioned at the beginning, it seems like a toothpick. And I'm reminded of a study, I wish I could go find it, where they used touching a toothpick to the skin as the sham acupuncture treatment. And what they found was that the sham acupuncture treatment worked as well as the insertion needle technique. And so the conclusion of the study was, see, look, acupuncture doesn't work because a toothpick does the same thing. And I thought to myself, actually, what you've shown is that non-insertive needle technique works as well as insertion needle technique. But that was not the conclusion of the researchers. So back to the beginning, Kuwahara was my first introduction to Teixin. And now I would say it's the primary tool that I use in my practice. Many treatments go by without a single needle inserted through the skin.
Yeah, that's great. And, you know, I love what you just said here. This really got my attention. Almost anything can become a tool. That is, I think it's true. I suspect it is.
If we think of the Teixin as a way to focus qi and concentrate qi to a point, then if my awareness was strong enough, couldn't I just use my finger to do that? Or a something to concentrate qi? Many students ask Kuwahara-sensei, Sensei, if this is true, why do we use needles? And Kuwahara is fond of saying, because we are acupuncturists.
Right.
Right?
It helps with the marketing.
Right. I mean, but if you can use anything, then why do we use needles? Because that's what we were trained to do. But the idea that they need to penetrate the skin to have an effect is not what I've seen clinically.
Yeah, that's great. We're going to get more into this here in a moment. Thomas, how about you?
Well, I've been practicing acupuncture for about 20 years, and I first started out doing TCM-style acupuncture, and actually I was introduced to Japanese acupuncture-style treatments through a book that's called Traditional Japanese Acupuncture, Fundamentals of Meridian Therapy, which was actually edited by Kuwahara Sensei. So, yeah.
There's a thread here.
Yeah, there's a thread. And actually, I have studied meridian therapy, traditional Japanese acupuncture under Ikeda Masakazu Sensei for several years. And he also introduced me to the non-insertive tools. And I just fell in love with the Teishin straight away. And I have increasingly been using that. And I think if I now insert 5 needles, it's been a very hefty year. So it's 99.9% non-insertive treatments I get these days, and mainly Teishin. So yeah.
Great. As for me, I can't remember where I first came across the Teishin. I don't remember. I do remember when I was first in acupuncture school, we had to buy one of these like spring-loaded Teishin things. And I think it was kind of like training wheels, like, hey, kids, here's something to hold in your hand and, I don't know, do something with. Didn't make any sense to me. I thought it was more like a toy than a tool. I'm trying to remember where Teishin first came into my awareness and when I started using it, but I can't put my finger on it other than I got introduced to Dr. Baer and his work, and there was something about the way that the Teishin reminded me of like cranial work. And in my training as an acupuncturist, we were taught to listen at least to the yang rhythm of the body, as the engaging vitality people would talk about it. Learn to pay attention to some of these quiet breathings that the body does. You can listen to the tissues in a way. And so the Teishin caught my attention because it rhymed with that diagnostic method of kind of quietude, very subtle but intentive input, and see what happens. So I came through it through the Dr. Baer tradition, I think. And much like Gary, there's a needle in particular that Dr. Baer had made that I remember the first time I held one in my hands. I'm not kidding you. It was like, I am not tall enough to ride this ride. It's like, I can't use this needle right now. I'm afraid to use this thing right now. I need to learn how to walk before I learn how to fly. Now I've got a set of those other needles, and it is remarkable. At any rate, that's my background with it. Erlind, you already began to speak to something with attention and focus. And I want to bring out the very broad and annoying question that I've got about Teishins, which is, what the hell is going on here? For that matter, what's going on with just a regular needle? I mean, this idea of acupuncture and that we can, with a very tiny input, engage something dramatic in the healing capacity. Look, it's what took me into acupuncture school about 30 years ago. Like, what is going on here? Guys, I got to tell you, I'm still at this trade and I still have this question. What is going on here? And especially with something non-insertive. I mean, I can kind of get insertive because we're, like air quotes here, we're doing something. We're adjusting the physiology in a way. But non-insertion? Erlind, let's start with you and then go from there.
Well, so the first thing that it makes me think of is something that Shudo Sensei often is fond of saying, which is this Japanese phrase, hari wa hito nari, which I think it was Mark Petruzzi who mentioned this on a previous podcast of yours, Michael. And the rough translation is, you are your acupuncture. The idea being that we are an integral part of the treatment, that our presence and our awareness is an integral part of the treatment experience. And so if we come to the body and insert a needle and step back, there's an effect. But if we bring our awareness and presence to that experience, something altogether different can start to happen as well. I think of the cranial work as well, right? This listening to the rhythms of the system. In my experience, the Teishin becomes almost like an antenna that allows us to listen to the movement of qi in the channels, in the organs, in the system as a whole. And I remember when I went to my first class with Kuwahara Sensei in 2000, what struck me, and And this is part of what got me into acupuncture to begin with, is that there was a presence or a concentration or an awareness of the process, an almost Qigong methodology for working with the needle that I had thought about and had gotten me interested in acupuncture. But when I initially studied TCM, I was not exposed to that. So fresh out of acupuncture school and sitting with Kuwahara and watching the concentration or the presence as part of the treatment, the interaction between patient and practitioner, that really turned me on in terms of, oh, there's a whole realm of discussion here. If the Tao that can be spoken of is not the eternal Tao, okay, then what is this ineffable thing that we're trying to use words to describe?
Great. I love it. I'm asking for some clarification, and you hand me back a little more mystery. And somehow that's a satisfying answer. You know, what a weird medicine. Gary, what are your thoughts on this?
Well, I would say some of the foundational skills that led me to using the Taishin really do come from being able to rub elbows with some cranial osteopaths. You know, going back about 3 decades or so, I was studying with and then TAing for a cranial osteopath in London, Richard Holding, who was a student of Ann Wales and Roland Becker. And then starting maybe 25 years ago, I had an opportunity to be in a osteopathic cranial study group with somebody who was a student of Jim Jealous. And by learning these osteopathic listening skills and really getting so that, yes, I'm a chiropractor, but after really embodying some of these osteopathic techniques, it got so that I very, very seldom do a thrust manipulation anymore. Similarly, it just became a natural thing to move from using insertive needles to contact needles, in that they seem to be a good listening post for seeing what is going on, as Erlen said, with the flow of the chi in the body, and to just, it's an amazing thing. You know, an acupuncture point is where you can access going into the inner terrain of the body, into the inner terrain of a person's being. And just like when you insert a needle, you've entered a new world as the tip of the needle pierces the skin, just like plunging into water, and now you're in a new world that's underwater, and you can look around and get acquainted with the terrain. Similarly, making contact and listening with the Taishin enters that inner world in a way that's a little more gentle and doesn't induce a defensive response from the patient from the potential of pain piercing the skin, getting this rush of Wei Qi to the area to see what you're doing. It's a lot easier to adopt the attitude of just swimming with the fishes, of just moving into the realm where you're not inducing an alarm response, but can really get a sense of what's going on inside.
That idea of an acupuncture point as like a portal to accessing the inner terrain, it's a lovely way of thinking about it. I've not heard anybody say it quite that way. I've heard a lot of people talk about it. It's a point of influence. It's, there's something vital about it. But considering it like a portal to an inner terrain, that really rings a bell for me. And it kind of matches with my experience. And beyond that, it's the way that I would like to be able to connect with my patients. So that's a lot to think about. Very appreciative for that. Thomas, how about you?
Yeah, well, I'm just sitting here nodding away because I guess that people who use the Taishin have the same experience to some degree. So both what Erland is saying and Gary is saying, it's complete within my experience as well. For me also, the Taishin is the coming together of my acupuncture practice with my meditation practice, where actually the meditation I'm practicing, it's a form of nidan, a form of internal alchemy, where some of the main techniques for during the process is just listening and letting go, listening and letting go, eventually reaching a state of oneness or connecting with what they call in they call the yuan, the source. And when I do that with the patient, and using the meditation on the patient, then things really happen. We get into that space where something extraordinary, or maybe really ordinary, really, maybe just not experiencing in our daily lives, but where that can happen and take place. So I don't think I have any, well, I don't think there's any way that can describe this phenomena completely with Western language. But it's definitely around in East Asian languages, and it's about unification, really, about getting to the source, about presence, about helping our patients to that state of harmony, just through listening and letting go, if that makes any sense.
You know, to me, it makes a lot of sense, in part because I've heard other practitioners talk about it. I had a conversation with somebody recently. I talked to so many people, I forget. We were talking about his work, and he says, yeah, basically, I do catch and release with my patients, like someone who really loves trout fishing, right? They catch the fish because they enjoy the process of catching fish, and then they let the fish go. And when I think about work in clinic, it's kind of similar, right? People come in, something's going on, I want to be able to help them, and then send them on their way. I really like thinking of an acupuncture practice, not as farming fish, like we're always going to have a bunch of fish in here, but more like catch and release. I really do. So that rings a bell. It also brings up something for me that I've been chewing on a lot. I hear quite often from people in our trade, they talk about using intention in their work. So, oh yeah, it's all about intention. Acupuncture is all about intention. And something about that doesn't fit for me. And the reason it doesn't fit is when I use what I think my intention is, I cannot separate my intention from my wishful thinking. I have a lot of trouble with that. That said, if I switch from trying to use intention to what I'm going to call attention, all kinds of things seem to open up for me. I'd like to get your thoughts about that.
Well, if I may, you know, I find the same thing completely. So what I've come to is, well, 10% intention, 90% attention. I need the attention to bring the needle to the point, but from there on, it's all attention. Yeah, for me at least.
I appreciate that very much, Thomas, that it takes something to bring the needle to the point. And a couple of people have mentioned it so far, this idea of connection, right? Connection with our patients, connection with Thomas, as you spoke of, and my meditation practice has heavily influenced my work as well. This idea of connection with patient, but also connection with self or connection with source is the term that you used, which I think pick your tradition. We could use a lot of different words to try to describe what that is. In Japanese, there's this idea seshin, right? That gets used in Zen a lot. And the literal translation of seshin is touching the heart mind, right? And in Asia, this idea of the heart-mind being this spirit, right? And so if we think of connection as part of that process, then the awareness, the listening post, I think as Gary said, of the teishin becomes the treatment. The idea that somehow we drive what's going on has never sat well with me. The idea that we open ourselves to the possibility of experience, and Stephen Brown spoke to this on another geological podcast, which really, again, got me excited, this idea of leaving ourselves open to the infinite possibility of what could happen. And that's present in source. So if we do our practice in advance here in our system, when we bring that system to the clinic, that is the participation in the process. Kuwahara's, another quote from him, it's a miracle. Every treatment is a miracle that person and us, that we showed up in the treatment room at that moment for that connection. If we
experience that as a miracle, there's an infinite possibility of things that can happen, not because we're making it happen with our mind or, Michael, like you said, wishful thinking, but by leaving ourselves open to the possibility that anything might happen as a result of that treatment.
Hello, everyone. Anne Cecil Sturman here. A working knowledge of the 8 extraordinary channels from the unbroken oral tradition of acupuncture is valuable beyond words. The power of these channels is tremendous if the practitioner has well-integrated diagnostic, theoretical, and practical skill. You'll be familiar with Dumai, the governor channel, or the Sea of Yang, the primal reservoir of Yang, which ultimately finances all movement and growth. But this channel also governs the ability to self-determine. The psycho-emotional presentation of your patients can be matched to a classical activation of this channel, clearing impedance in the free flow of Yang Qi to body, mind, and spirit. I'd like to share with you the marvelous potency of the Du channel in a full-length live treatment video from the seminar I taught last year in Melbourne, Australia. It's at annececilsturman.com/sinews2024. Click on the Jump to Free Teaching button or see the link on my Instagram page at annececilsturman. Thanks, Michael. Back to you.
Anything might happen as a result of that treatment. Okay, that sounds really nice. When I think about being in clinic, in being open to anything that might happen, that means adverse reactions could happen. It means emotions could get released. All kinds of things might happen that I or the patient might feel uncomfortable about. And sometimes that happens. And in some way, that needs to be welcomed as well, in my experience. And there's a good tick in the checklist for some cultivation to be able to keep some kind of presence in the moment when things unravel. Because often enough, when people are in a healing process, there's some shit that's going to unravel in our presence.
The other aspect of...
Well, the mind, how I see it, is quite limited. So when we use intention, it's going to drive a specific way and it's going to call for specific things to happen. So practitioners can, depending on their psychological and qi makeup, take things in a specific direction. Some people will always get a trauma response or emotional response, and some will always get people sweating and stuff like that. But that's driven by mind, and that's taking people in a direction that the practitioner wants them to be in. And I don't think, at least for myself, I don't have the right to take the patient in a specific direction that I want them to go in. They come to me to get help, and I will do what I can to help them go to where they will be at their best at any time. And I do not know what that is. So I have to park my intention. I have to park the mind. Otherwise, I will not be able to follow.
I'd like to second what Thomas just said. You brought up the point, Michael, of adverse events that can arise. In my experience, that really does come from intention rather than paying attention. Because with intent can also come tunnel vision. So you're narrowing what you can actually perceive, and that's where you can get in trouble.
So part of this practice then, Gary, is to widen our attention. Do I have that right?
Yeah, you got it. And lots of nuance comes into that. Everything matters. Your meditation practice, how your own inner life is, what you had for breakfast that morning, what type of tea you drank, and whether you enjoyed it or not. How clean is the room? The posture, everything affects how many channels you can be receptive to when just paying attention and noticing what's going on in the room.
I agree, Gary. I feel like this, what you speak of, it encourages a self-cultivation process. That it encourages us to pay attention to these things when we're not in the clinic room. So when we come to the clinic room, we have an awareness that can expand in all the ways that you describe.
Isn't and absolutely, the teaching can be a gathering point for all of that, a concentration point. So that's where the tool comes into its right. It can be a toothpick on your finger or anything really, but the tation somehow fits really, really well into this, well, connecting your mind with the universe or the source and the patient. Just in that little grain of millet-sized head on the tation, it's just, that's the center of the universe. So it's perfect for that, yeah.
The head of the tation is the center of the, as the center of the universe. You know, again, these are, I can take that in as an image, almost as a poem, right? Something to investigate. And then, of course, there's that intentive, knowing, knowledge mind that wants to know if I'm doing it right and wants to do it right and wants to be of service and wants to be helpful. You know, there's a lot of good intention that I feel like I've brought to my practice over the years that's actually gotten in the way of helping people. I think, Gary, you mentioned this. When we have an idea of what we think is the right thing to do, and then we're not paying attention to other things, it's easier to take people in a direction that might not be helpful for them. Because it's like, by God, I'm the doctor, and I've studied this, and I've got a little bit of smarts, and I got some experience, and some of that experience has been helpful, because I've actually been able to help people. But doggone it, sometimes that seems to get in the way. Sometimes knowledge really gets in the way of being present. And I feel like I chew on that in clinic every dang day.
I'm reminded of something that Shudo Sensei said, I think through Stephen Brown, which is that the theoretical knowledge is important and the technical skill is also important, but the presence or the awareness or the heart is the most important component of what it is that we do in the clinic. And if we let these other things take over, this idea of we want to see a certain thing happen, it's like a stagnation, right? We're stuck to a particular thing, and that stagnation can create issues over time. The idea that we know and we want this thing to happen. Kuhar is fond of saying the harder you try, the less the result, which is a way to try to get us to let go of this idea that we want this to be a certain way. And Michael, you spoke to it, the idea of what about air quotes adverse reactions? What does that look like and where do those come from? I think there's a long discussion in there maybe. And Gary, you spoke to it a little bit. I think of this idea of only wanting one thing, stagnating the system or holding things rather than allowing for that expansion or like I said before, endless possibility during treatment.
So how do you guys deal with this one? It seems to me, at least in the world that we live in at this point, that the tacit agreement of medicine is a patient has a problem and they're coming to us because we're going to help them with that problem. We're supposed to help them. We're supposed to know something. We're supposed to do something. We're supposed to have some knowledge and some capability, some capacity, some skill. And again, the agreement is we're there to do something to help them. And it's just part, it's like part of the deal these days. I find, and I want to take that seriously, because that's the way the agreement is with medicine, at least as I understand it. I could be missing something here. And so I also want to be attentive to that aspect as I'm open to the infinite. Thomas, have you got some ideas about that?
That's really a paradox, isn't it? Because when we see a patient, we do take the pulse, we do investigate the abdomen, we do palpate the meridians to come to some sort of protocol we can use for that patient. And when we've discovered that and we put the needle to the point, then the other bit takes over, the non-doing. So it's always both sides. Even though the doing may last longer than the non-doing, the doing itself still matters about 10% of what's going on. So it's a little bit like the attention versus attention. That we have to work with on both planes, both the physical plane where we're separate before we go into where we're not, where things happen. So that it's not really conflicting at all. It's a paradox, yes, but it's not conflicting, in my mind at least.
Doesn't that feel like the trick of the Tao is to hold the paradox at the same time?
Yeah.
to hold the center of the universe and the circumference at the same time. To hold the yin and yang together, to hold the knowing and the not knowing at the same time. There's our duality into unity. And maybe that's our life practice, is to learn how to do that.
I would definitely agree on that. Yeah.
So Thomas, you were saying you could, or one of you guys, I can't remember, said you could use your finger. You could use an actual toothpick, or maybe just your attention. I know that there are times I'll be sitting and I'll be listening to the yang rhythm in the body, and I'll wonder, you know what? I wonder if like P6, pericardium 6 and spleen 4 would be helpful for this patient. I'll just put a little attention into those points and see if the rhythm changes. Sometimes it does. It's a curious way to test points. I'm wondering how important it is from your perspectives, the actual metals that are in the Taishin, or the shape of that matter for the Taishin, or maybe just the mind of the Taishin maker and what they put into the Taishin. What are you looking for in a Taishin? How do you know which? I suspect you've got several. I know I do. It's fun to have different tools. How do you know which Taishin to use for what kind of issue? And Gary, I want to ask you about this, because you're the guy that told me some time ago that when you got a Taishin, like, carry it around in your pocket, keep it in your hands. When you're on the phone talking to somebody or doing a podcast, just, you know, get to know it, become friendly with it. So what are your thoughts about this?
Well, yeah, every tool has its own spirit. And while, yes, I could use a toothpick or I could use my finger, I can use all the help I can get. So the idea is to find... find what is going on with the patient, and then which tool contains the spirit that can be the best ally to you at that moment. So while I have favorite patients, one particular favorite that I already mentioned, I'll rotate through maybe almost a dozen different ones depending on the situation. So yeah, I'd say the most important thing is the spirit, which has a lot to do with the intent of the maker when they shaped that tool. There's a spirit that gets, you know, worked into the metal. And like being in a workshop, and do you use this kind of screwdriver or that kind of screwdriver or this kind of hammer or that one? You can do it all with one tool, but to have a variety of tools that match the situation just brings a lot of ease into the practice. So yeah, the metal matters, the shape matters, whether the tip is sharp or not sharp, how wide the metal is, everything matters.
Gary, what are your thoughts about like the more pointy side versus the more round side? Is that, I've heard about this in terms of like tonifying or dispersing, but there's times I've used either side for like the opposite of what it was supposed to do, just because it kind of felt right in my hand at that moment. And yet, you know, there's a part of my brain that's going, well, pointy side to disperse. Is it just a matter of paying attention to the tool and seeing how it wants to be used? Or do you have some other, like, more fundamental, you know, maybe more formed, less, you know, rather than unformed ways of thinking about using that tool?
Well, I think you said it right there. How does the tool want to be used in the moment? And some of these general rules as guidelines are good ones. For instance, if I'm using my gold Taishin with this nice millet seed tip, very easy to do everything that can be done with just tonification and not worry about dispersion. Because who doesn't benefit by, you find just the right spot to deposit a blob of golden light and let it do its thing? You know, sometimes it has an effect right where you place the light. Sometimes it will travel in a channel. Sometimes, and this is really cool when this happens, is when the entire channel just lights up like a tube of light. And whereas other Taishins, for instance, I find the Dr. Bear needles to be very, very directional. And notice it does have a pointier tip, so almost requires more nuance of the touch. So that if you're trying to be purely tonifying, you don't want to apply pressure that will cause any sensation of discomfort or pain, or else you instantly have turned into a dispersing technique.
What about the rest of you guys? What's your sense of this?
Well, Gary, I like the way you say it, that there are some, you know, sort of general ideas about this. Kuwahara-sensei always taught to use the rounded side of the teishin for tonification. And I think we've all found that sometimes we do it the other way. Sometimes something different is called for. And it seems almost counterintuitive to take the pointed side and point it away from the body and use this rounded side for tonification, but it easily keeps us in the tonification realm, again, Gary, as you said, because it softens the whole influence on the system. The ideas of different metals, too, I'm reminded in Japan one time, I went to the Meridian Therapy Conference, and there was many tables of people selling things. And one of the tables had lots of teishin, and I went over and looked at the teishins and picked one up, and it felt in my hand like something had come alive. And my Japanese wasn't great. Their English wasn't great, but it finally came out that, oh, this is a solid platinum teishin. Now, I carefully put it back down on the table and said thank you very much and walked away, feeling like I wasn't really qualified to drive a Maserati at that point, that maybe the Toyota Camry version would be better for where I was in my practice. And over the years, I think you can do anything with anything, right? You can have a stainless steel teishin, and a gold teishin has a different spirit and a different quality to it. You don't need to spend thousands of dollars. And there are some remarkable tools, Gary, this teishin that you and I have both played with over the last few months being a particular example of a teishin that has a very strong spirit and presence to it. And it does happen to be solid gold, handmade. And that does have an influence. But again, I think the idea that you need a particular metal or a particular thing to work, I don't feel that that's the case. Some are maybe a little stronger at helping to accumulate chi, the more precious metals having a different effect, I think, but by no means is some, you know, $800 teishin required to be able to use a teishin.
Yeah, and along those lines, yeah, I have tools that are favorite to use in my home, in my clinic, but I always like to have one with me. So I got from Mark Parzynski a teishin made out of, I believe it's bronze, maybe brass. Because I can keep it in my pocket at all times, even if I'm, you know, driving a tractor or what have you, and it won't get bent. I keep that, and I keep a copper chokishin in my pocket pretty much at all times, because you never know when you're going to need a good tool, and you don't want to take some soft metal thing that can be bent if you sit on it. So I find in a pinch, yeah, any really decent tool can do, and sometimes durability would be the factor that makes you choose one over another. But, you know, to a large extent, the best teishin is the one that you've got in your hand.
Yeah, Farmer John teishin. I can use this thing anywhere for anything. It's like the Swiss Army knife. Thomas, what are your thoughts about it?
Well, different metals, different shapes definitely have their different feel to it. But in the end, I personally would like to overcome that difference. So I'm not, you know, I'm not dependent on that tool. So I'm really competitive with myself in that respect. I really want to get to a point where it doesn't matter, but it still matters a little bit, at least. I mean, it's maybe the last 5%, 10%, whether I choose a titanium teishin or a golden or a silver teishin. But in the end, I really just want to be able to, you know, overcome that. So all metals and tools are basically the same. Not there yet, not even close, but yeah.
Well, part of the cultivation, right? Which is a big piece of what we're doing. And I love that idea of this is just my everyday carry. You know, I got friends, they carry little flashlights, carry a little pocket knife. I like to carry a little pocket knife, my everyday carry. You know, the tools of the day, my pocket knife, my cell phone, my keychain, my Taishin.
Yeah, I'd like to take a little bit back to the talk we had about intention and attention, because if you're very focused on the metal and on the shape and things like this, you're more in the world of intent than attention. I mean, of course, that can be necessary, at least for some time, but eventually it shouldn't matter too much, I guess.
The Taishin is a gentle and effective tool for treating patients without inserting acupuncture needles. Using a Taishin causes no pain or discomfort, allowing practitioners to treat even the most sensitive of people. Using the Taishin invites practitioners to evolve senses and dormant capacities. Humans are capable of great subtlety, far greater than we often believe. Working with the Taishin compels us to confront many of our assumptions about what makes acupuncture effective. This exciting journey of self-discovery helps practitioners to refocus how they practice acupuncture. If you'd like to dig in deeper, check out episode 303, where I talk about all things Taishin with Dr. Bob Quinn. Blue Poppy carries a series of handcrafted Taishins created by a silversmith cooperative in San Pancho, Mexico. They also offer many videos on their YouTube channel, which provides basic instruction on how to use a Taishin and other non-insertive tools that they carry. Dr. Bob Quinn's best-selling book on how to effectively use the Taishin is also available. Visit www.bluepoppy.com for Taishins and other fine Japanese acupuncture tools.
Well, I really appreciate this differentiation that you've shared with us, Thomas, that there is a place for the intention. There is a place for the diagnosis. There is a place for that I'm standing apart and perceiving. And then there's a whole different space of being with and interacting and knowing when to use which aspect of our intention or attention. That's really powerful. And that really helps me with this question that I've been chewing on for a long time, which is, as I said earlier, there's this tacit agreement of medicine that I'm supposed to do something. And I've also had so much experience with what Erlen was talking about, which is there's a kind of doing, not doing that we also do. There's a place for the doing. There's a place for the not doing. Knowing how to navigate that is, well, it's not a bad way to spend the day engaging that investigation.
I would argue that the Taishin is actually a really good place to start with in terms of treatment, as opposed to taking a sharp pointy object and putting it through the surface of the skin. Certainly in my training with Kuwahara Sensei, we were first given a Taishin to use because on a certain level, it's forgiving in its function with the body. You can touch, you can push down, you can have a little heavy, and still you can see changes in the pulse. Michael, you talked about that idea of putting your mind to a point. Let me check PC6 and spleen 4. Well, certainly if we use our pulse diagnosis, we can listen to the pulse and intend at a particular point, or even better, take the Taishin and just touch it to a particular point and feel the changes in the pulse. So on a certain level, I think the Taishin is a very forgiving tool and a good place to start the practice, because like everybody's saying, we still have our diagnosis, we still have our pulse, our hara, our channel palpation. We do all of these things. And then when we step into the realm of doing, not doing, or connection, or however we want to describe that treatment space, the Taishin, I feel like, is a really good place.
It's a curious thing because it's, in some ways, it's both safer, as you point out, certainly less intrusive. And yet at the same time, it can be like marvelously, I was going to say more effective, but I don't think effective is quite the right word. It can call forth a response that can be quite dramatic. That's a curious word to use, awakening.
But I do see that a lot when I teach as well. You know, the first time students have a station in their hand and they touch a point and this, and they feel the meridian warming up, they're in disbelief, you know. So it is an awakening, really. And I do agree that it's a really good place to start and maybe also to finish your acupuncture career with a station. Because at the same time, it's a brilliant tool for beginners, but it's also an extremely challenging tool for experts. You know, yeah.
Really. First, there is a needle, and then there is no needle, and then there is a needle. That's not a needle. I want to ask you guys about something that I've noticed in working with the Teishin. I think I might be looking for a little guidance, or I just want to share a curiosity. I don't have an answer, but I've got this thing that I'm noticing. This is something I'm attending to and investigating in my practice at this point. And that is, as I've been working with the Teishin, again, recently, I suspect you guys, and I suspect everybody listening, look, we go through all these different phases in our practice. We have all these like questions or inquiries that we take to our work with our patients to try to understand our patients and ourselves and what we're doing. You know, it's an ongoing process. Something I've noticed lately in working with the Teishin is that I've been connecting with what seems like the fluid in the Sanjiao. You know, we talk about the Sanjiao as the pathway of the fluids, at least the classics do. And there's this idea that the Sanjiao is this interconnected organ that, you know, has a function but no form. It has something to do with fluids and has something to do with interconnectedness. And recently, Western medicine has discovered an unknown organ, is what they call it, the interstitium. What a great name. It's this fluid-filled bit of connective tissue. You can't find it in a desiccated body because it needs fluid to do its function, which I think is just flipping fascinating. But something that I've been noticing is that when I take my attention with the Teishin into that fluid of the triple burner, Gary, you said it earlier, it's like there's a whole world in there. And I'd like to get your guys' thoughts about the fluid aspect of us and how you think about it and how you might bring that into treatment, if it's even something that you paid attention to. But if it is, I'd like to get your thoughts on it because it's something that's very, very curious for me right now.
It's interesting that you bring up that point of the new organ being discovered. When I first started studying German biological medicine back about 30 years ago, their model is based on a couple of principles. One of them is the homotoxicology model, which is basically Shang Han Lun. But then the other has to do with the physiological function of the extracellular matrix. And the man who wrote the textbook of the matrix, Matrix and Matrix Regulation by Pissinger, is very interesting that he talked about how information is transduced from one part of the body to every other part of the body instantly through the milieu of the extracellular matrix. And the German biological medicine practitioners that I met in those days really thought of acupuncture as being very primitive because they looked at it as, well, you stab cells by thrusting a needle through the skin, causing The movement of biophotons as the cells scream and die. And that is rather crude compared to simply guiding information to where it is needed in a more elegant way. How wonderful to be able to simply, you know, find a place on a patient's body where a conversation can be had and information can be induced to move and create a regulating effect on the system.
Such a fascinating thing to think about inflammation as an aspect of regulation, because one of the buzzwords that people come in with these days is, well, you know, I got inflammation. I got to get rid of this inflammation. You know, inflammation is a big thing these days. And a lot of people self-diagnose. I mean, sometimes people come into my clinic these days and I, well, you know, what's going on? I always ask them, you know, kind of open-ended, what's going on? Well, you know, I just feel like I'm full of inflammation. I'm just inflamed today. I'm always like, what are they talking about? What does that mean that I've got inflammation? Right? And again, it's usually seen as a negative, something to get rid of. And here you're talking about it, Gary, as an aspect of the system re-regulating itself.
Well, I actually used the word information, but inflammation is information too.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I misheard that.
To me, it's just inflammation is simply counterflow.
So, Michael, you talked about the triple warmer idea, right? And the Western perspective coming up with this organ, this interstitial fluid, right? This interstitial space where the information travels. I feel like this touches on the ideas in East Asian medicine around triple warmer and pericardium, right? And there's not a whole lot of discussion, certainly in the sort of traditional five element models, right? We like to talk about heart and pericardium and triple warmer and pericardium. We like to talk about heart, small intestine, excuse me. And triple warmer and pericardium are sort of set off to the side. I find myself thinking about triple warmer and pericardium a lot lately, both in the transmission and movement of fluids throughout the system. But if we think of the pericardium as an aspect of kidney yang or Mingmen fire or that original source qi, how the triple warmer and pericardium transmit both the heat and the fluids throughout the system, or if we use Gary's word, that they move this information throughout the system. If this information is the source qi, then when we're tonifying, when we're strengthening the body's innate knowing, I feel like that's where the triple warmer and the pericardium really come into play. Is this movement not only of fluids, but also source qi and therefore information throughout the entire system. And so again, back to Taishin, I think the Taishin is a useful way to connect at this level, like you're saying, that we can feel these movements in the body at a thicker level in the actual fluids, but then also at this source qi layer as well.
Thomas, this sounds a little like some conversations you and I have had.
It does, and it's something that interests me a lot. Actually, it's one of the main things for me in my practice to understand the pericardium and the sanjiao better. Actually, about fluids and the qi, in Neidan, the internal alchemy school I practice in, we talk about qi as a fluid, a warm fluid that we can build and we can improve the quality of. And that fluid or qi fluid is actually the source qi itself. So that's what we work with primarily. And that is gathered in by the pericardium from the heart, from all the blood vessels, and pulled in like to the Mingmen, from where it is again propelled out to the rest of the body. So the sanjiao is kind of it's a matrix for the fluid to move in, or for the qi fluid to move in and warm the body. So that's how I see it and how I experience it in clinic as well. So whenever I tonify a meridian adequately, I expect it to be warm along the meridian because of exactly this, that the source qi or the fluid qi, the warm fluid qi, comes down and warms everything up. It brings the blood with it, definitely. So yeah, That's how I experienced it. And by the way, the Sanjiao is not, I think, yeah, it's great they found that little bit of anatomy that they call the interstitium. That's really great. But the Sanjiao is not localized like that. The Sanjiao is all over the body. It's everywhere where they are, where the huang or the membranes are and where the interstices are. That's the Sanjiao. That's where qi fluid travels through. And also, as the Nanjing says, and they knew their anatomy back then. They dissected corpses and things like that. So they had the information. But it still says that the pericardium or the xinbao, really, the xinbao, the heart protector, and the sanjiao have function but no form. And that fits the bill really well, that it's the membranes and the interstices where the qi fluid can move through the body and move out through the points where we can contact it and help proper information to reach the organs and the rest of the system.
This is the alivening piece, right, Thomas? I mean, I so appreciate the way you speak of it, right? That if you cut open a corpse, you're not finding the triple warmer and the pericardium. So these are the enlivening organs that transmit the qi and the fluids and the information and the source throughout the entire system. So I would love to discuss this further sometime, because I'm feeling like this is such an important component of our medicine that to a certain extent has been sidelined in a lot of traditions. I think just because somehow that understanding over time has not been as clear as maybe it's coming forth again now.
Yeah, to me, it's actually the main thing in our medicine. This is the central pivotal point of our vitality and how everything works. This is it. This is the Mingmen, the Xinbao, and the Sanjiao. And to move it back to the Taishin is a perfect way of influencing this, because the way you contact source is by clearing your mind, being attentive, and connecting with source outside as well as inside. So there's a definite link between those. Coming back to the small head of the Taishin becoming the center for that interaction.
This is really helpful, you guys. I appreciate this. Again, I've entered kind of at the fluid level into this sort of landscape that Gary was talking about. You guys remind me that the Yuan Qi also flows through all of this. So that's great. That's something else for me to investigate. I'd kind of forgotten about it, right? I've gotten so curious about this fluid, but I forgot that there's also this qi. And Thomas, as you talk about it, it's this kind of warm, qi is kind of a warm fluid. So this is great. I've got some things to look at as I go back into clinic. And here's another piece. I have, for a long time, tried to wrap my mind around the idea of ministerial fire. Right, we hear about this and it gets talked about, and it's been one of those things that for me over the years, I haven't quite grasped it. I try to shake my head knowingly when people talk about it because I'm supposed to know something about it. But you know, the truth is, it's been very confusing for me. And somehow this conversation that we're having here right now in this moment, considering the fluids, considering the Yuan Qi, considering the warmth that comes out of the heart, how it moves all through the Huang, which we could also call triple burner, all that interstitial space, I'm getting a sense that, oh, these are all aspects of ministerial fire that can be investigated. I don't have an answer, but I sure have a couple of portals now to consider. So thank you very much for that. I'm curious to see how that enlivens the practice. And I'm also curious, you know, there's this point on the back, I think it's just outside of the inner shoe point for the pericardium. Correct me if I'm wrong. Gao Huang Shu, right, is on the outer bladder line. It's the point to contact the Gao Huang, which is really this Huang material, I think. Have you guys used that point much or investigated it? I want to go into clinic now and look at it on every patient I have.
Not much, but it's specific for the diaphragm. That's what the Gao Huang is. That's the diaphragm. So it's a thickening of the membranes, but it's just a part of the Huang system. It's an important one because it kind of helps the Yuan Qi move from the heart down to the Mingmen, and it's basically ruled by the liver. So there's the regulating aspect or mechanisms of the liver comes in question here. Actually, one point that for me, it's much more interesting for the San Jiao is the bladder 26, Guan Yuan Shu. And Guan, that's the gate, and Yuan, that's the Yuan Qi, and Shu is transport. So it's a place where the Yuan Qi gets transported out. And that's one of the main areas I use at the end of treatment to make sure that the entire system is balanced out. And a lot of heat will come from that. It will spread from there throughout the entire body. That's very interesting. So that may be a direct gateway to the Mingmen from there.
Yeah, Thomas, you did mention that proper tonification will result in meridians warming up. And, you know, I'm always looking for like hints and signs that wherever my attention has been with a patient that it's having some kind of an effect, some kind of feedback. So again, something to take into clinic and investigate. Gary, what are your thoughts about the ministerial fire?
Well, to me, that's where a big part of personal cultivation comes in, because changing the sinew structure of the body so that qi and fluids can move freely, that's what allows ministerial fire to function without overheating things and burning things up. I look at the necessary physical exercise to, it's like if a wire is too thin for the amount of current going through it, then it overheats. But if the gauge of the wire is thick enough, then functions can occur without any friction, without any counterflow, without any obstruction. And so it's a matter of making ourselves into vessels where the resistance to the flow is minimized.
Update your circuit breakers.
Yeah, or make it so that you're not always popping circuit breakers.
So, guys, for people that might be thinking that they'd like to start investigating the Taixing in their own practice, where would be a good place to start?
I'd say the most important thing is to get your hands on a Taixing, regardless of type or cost or metal, and bring the attitude of excitement and enjoyment to it. It's something you want to explore. If this conversation has done anything to inspire people to the endless worlds that are opened when you start working with the Taixing and then refine your own ability to perceive and use this thing in clinical practice, it's an endless lifelong learning journey. But start with excitement and joy.
You know, I could sign up for that.
Well, definitely what Gary said. But also just go ahead, try it out, set up some checkpoints, check the pulse before and after you try treating a point with the Taixing, just see what happens. Don't necessarily wait, have a specific output in mind, just try it out, get started. And since there are more and more people practicing with the Taixing, it should be possible to seek someone out who can help you at least in the beginning. I think so. Because it's really, I mean, the last issue of North American Journal was dedicated to the Taixing. I do know that's Japanese, you know, it's oriented towards the Japanese medical arts, but still it's out there. It's more and more people are using the Taixing. So reach out or just go ahead and try it out. It's fun and, you know, you're probably not going to hurt anybody.
I love your thoughts about take your checkpoints, the things that you already do, the things that you already know, the ways that you already know how to interact and get some information from your patient. And bring the Taixing in, see what it does. You know, we all have some, I would say, skill or cultivation with some of these ways of interacting with people just from the background we have, regardless of the tradition, right? There's the pulse and the tongue and just whatever else you might use that you've learned in your life, right? Pick a couple, use the Taixing, see what shifts. That seems like a really good way to start and have some guardrails as well. Because you're using something that you already know to investigate something that you're in the process of learning. Seems like good advice. Erland, what are your thoughts on this?
I think I would just second what Thomas said, which is, you know, to get a Taixing and like you just emphasized, Michael, to use the check system. Dr. Barry used to call it a check system, right? Use a way of, okay, here's what's going on before, and then I try this, and here's what's going on afterwards. And I mean, the way I think of it in my mind is just put down the needle and pick up the Taixing and see what happens.
See what happens with your treatment if you just set down the needle and use the Tatian for the whole treatment like you would otherwise, and see what happens. And if you're more comfortable to experiment on yourself, you know, Stephen Brown and Shudo Sensei both are wonderful supporters of the idea of self-treatment. So check your pulse and then touch the Tatian to CV12 and see what you feel. See how it feels in your own body. And you can experience it within yourself and then try it out on others. And you, like you just said, use the techniques of assessment that you already know to investigate this new tool. And there are some good sources and there are people teaching Tatian out there. So I think there are resources available. Finding a good Tatian can be a little challenging, but they're out there. So first is to get your hands on one and then just play. Like Gary said, just play. See what happens. Be excited about it. Be interested and open-minded about what you might see happen. And then just go for it. Dive in.
Yeah, I really appreciate this, you guys. And it so often learning for me is such an iterative process. And in listening to you guys, I realize there's things that I've investigated. I thought I knew, but I kind of forgot. And now I'm coming around to it again, like, oh yeah, I could do that. So often when I take people's pulse, I'm not a great pulse taker, but on occasion, something will really stand out in the pulse. Like it even gets my attention. Like, oh my God, that's really out of balance. This is really weak or that's really excess. And I'm thinking instead of trying to craft a diagnosis around that and go at it directly, oh yeah, we got to fix that pulse piece. Just pick up the Tatian. What is the one point or where am I drawn that might shift this thing that I'm feeling in the pulse? And just go put a Tatian on it and see what happens. I mean, it's simple enough to do, and the feedback is there, especially if something is very weak or very excess. I would suspect the very weak, you might not notice a change as quickly, but the excess should change pretty quickly, I would think. So that's what I'm going to take and go investigate the next time I walk into clinic. That I'm really looking forward to it. Practicing medicine is so much fun, you know? Well, any closing things that you guys would like to offer before we tuck this away for the day?
Well, maybe just this, that the medicine we practice is very diverse and there's no right way or wrong way to do it. Well, there's plenty of wrong ways, but there are also many right ways to do it. And the Tatian is one of them, which it's one of the ways you can interact with your patient on a different level. So if you really want to get into medicine and want to investigate reality, because reality is really, what is most real is really disease and death in the end. That's so real. Investigate that. And the Tatian is a wonderful tool for investigating that because you can see straight away what you're doing right and what you're doing wrong. And that should probably be the most important thing for a practitioner, is to want to investigate reality and see, or, you know, this life and death, and see how you can influence that in the patient, of course, to the degree where it is possible for us to interact with it, if that makes any sense at all.
So I want to second that, Thomas. Yes, it absolutely makes sense. There's a calligraphy on the wall in my clinic from Kuwahara Sensei, and the Japanese is Hari ni ai o komete, which means put your love in acupuncture. And so I feel like that for me is the parting thought, that to bring our love, our interest, our excitement, our desire to be of service, our presence, our awareness, our intention, our attention, to bring that excitement and that love and that interest to every single treatment that we do, I feel like that's what it is we do. That's seishin, that's connection, that's what we're looking for in the clinic. So to bring that to what we do, and Thomas, like you said, the Tatian is such a fabulous tool to help us with that. So to bring that joy to the clinic with us every day, that's what I feel like gets the results. That's the change that we're looking for. That's the awareness, that's the source for me in the clinic.
I remember Kuwahara Sensei saying that my patients pay me to meditate. And I think there's no better way than using the Tatian to stay centered in the present moment of time.
Wonderful. Well, gentlemen, really much appreciation today. This has been a delightful exploration, and I thank you so much for your time and your presence and your work And we may just have to come back and do this again at some point. I'm very excited about putting my needles down a little more and picking my tachine up a little more often. And I think I need to go find me a Farmer John type needle just to keep along with my pocket knife and my cell phone and my keychain. I don't want to leave home without it. Thanks, guys. It was Gary who suggested to me a while back now that I get to know my tachine tools. Keep them in my hands if I'm having a podcast conversation or reading a book, or just pick them up from time to time and see what they have to say. These days, they often travel in my pocket. They're not just tools, they're something that I'm familiar with. And yes, having them in my pocket means I'm never without a tool for practicing my trade, and that feels good too. I found with using that tachine that I'm more attentive with using the filiform needle as well. I suspect that comes from the way, as we discussed in the conversation, that they act as a kind of antenna. They are a bit like doing Qigong in that when you gently focus your attention into the present, and especially for me, into a sort of conversation with the connective tissue and more so the fluid within that, well, there's a lot going on. Once you get beyond the idea that you have to leave needles in the body for 20 or 30 minutes for a patient to be effectively treated, the tachine can open up all kinds of possibilities and a new terrain. Thanks as always for listening. If you liked this conversation, if you learned something new or found a moment of inspired insight, share the episode with your friends. If you want to support Geological, there's just one way to do that. It's by going to the website and becoming a member or leaving a one-time contribution today. Well, folks, that's it for today. Join us again next Tuesday for another conversation that connects up the voices of our community.